Hi everyone, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the following podcast belong solely to the host and its contributors. They are not necessarily the views of our employers, organizations, committees, or other group or individual.
I'm David Campbell.
And I am Jordan Bullock.
And I'm Joseph Whitney. This is Brewing with BIM,
where we talk about construction processes, technology, BIM, and beer.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Brewing with BIM. As always, I'm Joe Whitney, and with me is, a great group of cast today. We have Dave Campbell, as usual. Rob, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, Rob Sinclair. I'm a corporate technology lead for Wade Trim, based out of Pittsburgh. And thanks for having me on, Joey.
Well, thanks for supplying such a great variety of fancy whiskeys, man. St. Patrick's Day has never been so treated me so well, so this is perfect. Then we have Mr. Stephen Rushmore. What's going on, Stephen?
Oh, not much. Just happily celebrating St. Patrick's Day with some Heaven's Door here, courtesy of Sinclair Spirits.
Yeah, courtesy of Sinclair Spirits. For those of you guys that know, Sinclair Spirits is your one-stop shop for all the alcohol you could ever ask. So we're all drinking on, Dave, we're all drinking on some Heaven's Door, Redbreast, the hard to find stuff. We've been, sampling a few. We had some Pappy before you came on, and you definitely missed out not being here in person. That's
yeah,
it, buddy.
Dude, I'm definitely drinking? Jealous, man.
Yeah,
dude,
yeah.
It's St. Patrick's Day, brother. I'm Guinness, brother. I mean, it's St. Patrick's Day. I mean, I would either do Guinness or I do some Jameson or, some maybe if I'm in the liquor mood, but I'm going to be making some French onion soup here soon. So I'm going to be sipping on the Guinness while I'm making it.
Chef David. All right, man.
Nice. And Joey outfitted us with these filthy hooligan cigars. They're barber pole cigars for after.
Oh, heck yeah, dude.
Yeah, they're the St. Patty's Irish, whatever, the ones spiraled with candela leaf. They got a little bit of sweeter notes in them.
Heck yeah, man. Those are always good. And then have you guys ever had the Aaron Gobrah?
No.
Oh, dude, those are a good smoke, too. Those are a obviously it's an Irish like cigar. It's pretty sweet. I mean, it's a lighter colored cigar, but it's usually a good smoke. They're longer sticks.
All right, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, man.
Give him a Google here in a minute. Well, man, seems like all of us have been too busy to get together lately. We've had plans to obviously, get back together. We have usually all three of us are part of a CAD manager meetup and locally here in Pittsburgh. And we just, go to a brewery and have some fun and talk shop. But the winter's been treating us busy. I'm sure it's treated you guys busy. Stephen, you got promoted.
Yep.
You've been knees deep in everything. You've been traveling a lot. What else is going on, man?
Oh, man. Just trying to build out a team. Got promoted, which includes starting our own department. So, we started a digital practice. You can just think of that as a digital twin in this industry, though. So, we're just trying to simplify and increase all of our efficiencies, like I'm sure Rob's doing at Wade Trim. So
every time somebody says digital twin, take a drink, guys.
I know. It's digital practice. I have no idea what somebody means whenever they say they have a digital practice.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I don't want to start this off me being negative. We'll wait till we're a few more shots deeper here. Rob, you've started a new position at a new company. And
Yeah, man. It's been about 10 months now, so things are going great so far. A lot of good people I work with and a lot of great initiatives underway, and hopefully I'm making some change with the new company. So,
well, I saw a post recently on LinkedIn about your AI push, and I don't want to talk too much about AI. I see Stephen bowing his head here.
Yeah.
just wanted to kind of get some of your thoughts on the directions you guys seem to be wanting the industry to go.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely we have a big AI initiative here in 2024. Have a decent sized budget for a few different ideas, and we had a team of 24 people that went through probably 30 some ideas and kind of narrowed those down to six. And ultimately, I think we're going to focus on three to actually implement this year. So it's good.
Wow.
Stuff. That's one thing that's cool about Wade Trim. They're very supportive about these innovative ideas and technologies. And, it's happy to have made the switch.
The progressive technology push seems to be the, if you, it used to be that you were bleeding edge, but now it's now, you know, it was almost seen as a negative slight against somebody. But now it's like, well, it's not just marketing. You've got to stay one step ahead of everybody and actually put forth the efforts and try to get ahead of the software development companies that are, you know, might put out a half-baked product that may or may not fit most of your needs. Now you actually tailor some stuff that actually fits your needs.
Yep. So we just decided on the three initiatives last week. So time will tell how they'll play out here in 2024. So, and, you know, Stephen's digital practice, you know, we have a similar thing by a different term. You know, yep. We have the Office of Applied Technologies and okay. Advanced Design Technology Group, which is under the, we call it the OAT, but very similar, like just different terminology.
Kind of love all these acronyms.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think of it all as like an infrastructure, like you said, bleeding edge. Well, now everybody, it's not edge or not edge, you know, before or after the adoption. It's, if you don't have the infrastructure here set for your digital leadership and strategy, I mean, you're going to be literally left behind if you don't have that 100%. Staff. Before it was like, oh, I don't have a BIM manager. We may do, or a CAD manager or whatever. But now we have to have automation engineers and all sorts of things to be able to push forward. It's just what I see that every company, big and small, is doing right now. It's wild.
Yeah, I'm starting to see that now. If you're working on any large-scale projects, government, commercial, what have you, there seems to always be somebody that has a coding background on the project now, or at least doing something for the project.
My CIO has a great saying. It says AEC firms don't realize it yet, but they're all software companies. It's so true.
That's a good quote. AEC companies don't realize it, but they're software companies.
So are we a technology company or an engineering company?
I think we all work in IT.
I'm not sure about you guys.
That is definitely the truth.
Yeah, I'm not sure about you two, but I think 90% of my day is still, you know, I'm a sales guy now. Like, you know, sold my soul. I moved over to this
side. You've always been a sales guy.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, you're always pitching.
always coming there. You guys need this. Buy this now. No, I still, you know, most of my day still putting out little IT fires. Like, oh, this doesn't work. This isn't it. It's like, it's not you. It's Bluebeam or something.
Oh, geez, no.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you guys think about it. I mean, in all reality, when we actually start looking at that and kind of breaking it down, we all use software. Like, Joe, you're a sales guy. I'm an implementation guy, you know, kind of consulting and things like that. But in all reality, that's all we do is we manage software one way, shape or another. You know, we're managing software for our clients. The AEC, you know, companies they're managing their data stacks, trying to figure out what technology or what software is going to be better for them for certain things. It's completely right, man. I mean, at this day and age, we're all about adopting technology. But the problem is, like Stephen kind of said, if you don't have the infrastructure there, if you don't have a good understanding of why you're going to use that technology or how you're going to use that software, you're going to get left behind, because essentially the time that you're going to then take afterwards trying to, you know, because if you're marketing it, you don't truly understand the depth of it and how it can be used. Let's say the data in that software, or the data in the model that you're building with it, right? But I mean, in some way, shape or form, we now have to think about, like, there's not really just, let's say, Revit for a design firm. That's not the case. They have a design stack for Revit, for Bluebeam, Excel. You know, they have a lot of different applications. And then the add-ins that you mentioned, that the third-party softwares that can come up. There's so many different things that we have to evaluate now. Even, you know, you can't just pick a solution and say, I'm just going to go in this direction, because 9 times out of 10, that solution doesn't fit every single part of your business. Right. So we really, I mean, we have to figure out the automations and the integrations. We have to start thinking about how to make these pieces talk, you know, to really get the benefit out of your stack.
I'm going to interrupt you here. So, like, 20 years ago, even AutoCAD facilitated a job. The engineering usually still happened in other software. You know, a bridge engineer used some really antiquated stuff, but the design happened in AutoCAD. But the design side was, you know, almost 100% facilitated by the design program. But now we've gotten to a point where the design program is still only like maybe 85% of it. There's, you know, 15% of it that's kind of filled in with other technologies. And it's not it's not just one design program anymore. It's all the parts and pieces that go with it. And what you were saying there earlier about the data, and I know this could be another rabbit hole that we, you know, normally fall into here, but the data side is quickly coming where people are starting to realize and manage, you know, how they're going to have to manage it and what they're going to do with the data, what they can pull from the data, what metrics, and then how to standardize. And we had a conversation with Carlos Caminos a few weeks back about this is, yeah, the data is out there. Now, how do we standardize the data so we can actually get reportable metrics from it and then figure out how to use those metrics to improve or, you know, be faster, reduce costs, what have you. His whole thing is about, obviously, the ROI. Reducing costs is pretty much how he got in. You know, he sells himself to a company. He is a digital transformation specialist. That's kind of his role. And I feel like all of us, as we start to bleed more into this, you know, we'll call it, the autonomous future that we're kind of following into or whatever it is, we're all going to start become or transition to, you know, this digital transformation or digital specialist, because it's all going to be about how we manage the data, less more about the picks and clicks. Those still exist, but it's obviously how you're going to interact with the data, what you're going to do with the data, how you're going to use data to your benefit, how you're going to win that project. On the MEP side, we've talked about this in the past, like, you know, you win the contract to, you know, build the building, but you want the contract to service the building afterwards. Well, you own the data, so therefore that's your path. Well, how do you broaden this to all of the AEC firms in the industry, and so they can, you know, keep a leg in with their respective owners that they're trying to win projects from or service contracts? That's the future, I think. But sorry.
No, I mean, you said it in one way, like we used to have a CAD manager and you managed this. It was only this much of their job. But I mean, let's just call it what it is. I mean, we're talking about like state of the industry right now. One of my disciplines that are one of my groups, water, wastewater. How do you accommodate for a staff that doesn't just use civil 3D anymore? Now they use civil, infra, water CAD, Revit, the whole way down the spectrum. It's becoming a problem to know how to train, how to onboard, and how to, you know, push that staff to a higher level of using software when it's not just CAD.
Yeah. You told me, Rob, at your last firm that you used 80, you had to be an expert or so in 80 different types of software.
Yeah. Jeez. Yep.
And I'm sure that hasn't changed. I'm sure it's probably even added.
Very similar. And I'm not an expert in all 80 of those by any means. I know enough to get by, maybe an expert in a handful of them, but the biggest thing is knowing who to go to, you know, your internal resources that are experts in that software, and kind of playing matchmaker, so to speak. If somebody calls you and they need help with the software X, you're like, all right, I don't know the answer, but this person does. And you kind of marry them all together. But the biggest thing around all this, like you kind of mentioned, is like the implementation standards, policies, training, you know, lifting your staff up to excel and learn this stuff. And you know, some people that we work with don't really care. They're kind of content in what they're doing, their day-to-day work. And you know, we have people in this industry that are content doing redline markups and basic AutoCAD, and that's all they want to do for the rest of their lives. But then people like us want to be innovators and cutting edge and leading edge and just adopt and just grab all this stuff and run with it. So
those redline staff might go away though, and that's what I'm saying, like getting left behind. I mean, drafters, you guys still think drafters exist somewhere?
I think they might be called a different name,
just a technician without actual design experience, you know, is what I consider a drafter. I mean, I think that's going to go away. And so at least we're going to move that line farther to like a designer, where I have this much experience with design. So now what's their tool set, what's their toolkit?
And you guys, I mean, not to talk AI again, but like, you know, when we started this big AI push at Wade Trim like 6 to 8 months ago, everybody's like, oh my gosh, this is going to take my job. I'm like, no, it's not going to take your job. I'm like, AI is not going to take your job, but somebody using AI will. So just be open-minded, you know, embrace the new technology and let it go where it's going to go. And I mean, if you're resistant to it, then yeah, somebody is probably going to take your job.
I think the image for this episode is going to be the South Park, they took your jerks, but it's going to be AI.
It's not going to be all the whiskey.
We should note to our listeners, we just switched it up. Rob, tell us what we're drinking now, my friend.
This is, since it's St. Patty's Day, we have an Irish whiskey theme. So this is Green Spot, finished in a Zinfandel wine cask, Chateau Montanella.
Fancy.
It is quite smooth. Fancy. Out of all of the Irish whiskeys I think I've had, this is up there. This is
better than Heaven's Door, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll be honest, man. I think I thought at first that maybe I just built up the Redbreast Heaven's Door thing in my head, but I don't know. After hearing you guys say it, there's a taste.
There's a funk on it.
I thought it was maybe what we washed out the glass with or something, but a few sips later, it's still there. So
well, we started with the Pappy, and it's all
gone. Oh, man. I mean, 45 seconds in, he mentioned AI after drinking that, so I'm not a fan of that.
I just wanted to get out of the way.
Yeah. No more AI talk or digital twin. Yeah.
That said, on the table with all this whiskey, Rob has the new Apple glasses, the new
Apple Vision Pro.
Apple, that's what they are, Vision Pros.
Courtesy of Waitrip.
So how are you planning on implementing VR, AR, mixed reality in what you do?
Yeah. So we purchased two Apple Vision Pros. They're expensive, about $4,000 a pop. But they just came out February 2nd. Right now, there's really no applications, very few applications for the AEC industry. But, all these companies are developing things for it. There's ways to push data to them through different web browsers and stuff like that, but right now there's no native applications. But time will tell. We're using AR, VR, MR, XR, whatever you want to call it now, in various stages of different projects. We're doing a lot of high-end video game engine kind of graphic renderings. So we're not going to talk about digital twins anymore, but we're doing a digital twin initiative, and we're going to get some of that data into maybe the Apple Vision Pro or an Oculus or something like that, whatever is compatible with it. But
So I'm Team Android, obviously. Steven, I know I'm in good company here. But the one thing Apple has done is they have consumerized technology in such a way that it is forced into construction design industry. So the apps will come. The iPhone XR, you were one of the first that were highly promoting the scan capabilities of it, Rob. And, I still hear about it. I'm probably just, people are like, oh, we got to get a scanner, blah, blah. It's like, oh, it's just my iPhone. Obviously, different use cases.
Why do they talk like that?
I don't know. Because it's the only voice I can do, man.
Okay, get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn. But the cool thing that came with it, though, was a bunch of apps started popping up. The use cases were there, and it was very disconnected from traditional AEC technology, but the bridge has been made. So it's only a matter of time before your Vision Pro.
What are you guys hoping to see on it? I mean, I immediately think of like Revisto or, what's the new Forma platform where you can actually look up and see the conditions, but you could be on the site. See through the deck.
That's what we're hoping for. Even tying this into a higher grade like GNSS GPS sensor from like Leica or Bad Elf or something like that, so you have a more accurate position. Topcon. Yep. You guys have those?
Shameless plug.
The sales guy didn't sell those to me yet. Yeah. So. But all that kind of stuff. Or just going out to a brand new site development project and putting your client in this headset and saying, here's what your project's going to look like once it's built. And you can really see, if it's what they were after or not, based on going into a mixed reality environment.
Yeah, and thinking about it, too, we've kind of morphed away from local projects, right? A lot of times design teams are remote. Being able to see the model, the designs against real world conditions without having to pay for a plane ticket. We were talking about a plane ticket before the startup to go to Ireland is like $2,000. Imagine sending somebody from, here to Chicago, 5 freaking times over the next 3 months just to, capture this. Well, data's there. Let's just slap it in a headset, walk around, figure it out.
Well, and another thing I think I want to point out is, you guys were talking right as we came on, and we didn't record it. But, you guys started talking about the old Autodesk Seek and Unify and how that's turning into the Autodesk like content catalog, right? And I, you know, one thing that I'm really excited for, especially as we start bridging, you know, bringing this conversation, obviously we talked about a little bit, you know, a little bit about the digital twin, but also as we start, you know, talking, having further conversations about AR, VR, MR, XR, you know, all the abbreviations there that they could have. But once, you know, if you guys can think about it, I mean, honestly, if we can standardize content, and I mean, not even just really standardize it, but really push that level of data into our content and have a good standardized place to go to that manages it, we can push that into our models. We can start using that down the road, AR, VR, MR, you know, we can use that in the owner's handover, the digital twin conversation that we're having. It all really stems from that, right? It stems from the content that you're putting into it. I'm super excited, you know, obviously as we're having more of these conversations, Apple is obviously, like Joey said, it's putting a lot of construction technology in the consumer's hand. And once we get to that level, I mean, dude, I think about, you know, Joey and I geek out about this stuff, but you're walking through a facility, like you're walking through a building, a doctor's office or anything like that. And you can actually, like, you know, see through everything that is there. It's incredible to be able to know what's inside of the walls. You know, I'm out on this construction site in Virginia and they're having a GPR go through to you know, figure out where the joists are, to figure out where PT cables are, where different items are held, whether in a floor, roof deck, what have you. And I'm like, man, to be able to have, you know, obviously we have to be able to push that in. Like we're making, you know, the push from PDF to CAD files and PDF to Revit models for as-builts. But you think about the turn that we're making right now, the capabilities that we have, if we can really get that content, standardize good families, good content in these models, and pushing that forward into, you know, the consumer grade technology, like a headset, your cell phone, and being able to consume that data in that environment.
Yeah, you can't, there you go. That was very clever. We just switched whiskeys.
No comment on his very intelligent, well thought of statement there, Joe. Just
no, he makes them regularly. No.
shut up, guys.
No. No. He definitely hit the nail on the head. You know, the ability, especially we're talking about models that are captured in unorthodox ways, like GPR, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to have that later on and apply that into your model, connect all this, and whether it's Apple or whoever that's developing the technology on the consumer level for, you know, putting in the hands of the average person, it really is going to force the adoption even further. I don't know, man. I think GPR is still very, very expensive, and it's still hard to come by in most instances. But when I do see it, it's pretty cool, man. I know you guys did some GPR back in the day with your old firm.
Yeah, yeah. And that, like, when you look at that data, like, to me, it's like looking at a freaking sonogram or something. It's like, it's so archaic.
Are you sure that's a piece?
Yeah, dude. No, seriously. So, I mean, my GPR experience came from, you know, Afghanistan and driving over freaking roads and like, is that a rock or is that a bomb? You know, and really what you're looking at in a GPR, like the data, it's just, it would be hard. I mean, yes, you can interpret it and it shows you to a level of degree what's there, but you're right. It's kind of like a sonogram. Like it's really not, it's almost like a bunch of points and then it detects something and there's another level and that could be, you know, something it could not, you know, it's open to somewhat interpretation there. So, I mean, the more usable data that we could have there, the better.
One of the old surveyors I worked under many, many years ago, I went back when I had hair. He was telling me about how they had GPR for that exact reason on their trucks. And then fast forward maybe 20 years, you and I, you know, get together and we're talking, you know, you're talking about the same thing. But then you had like this crazy idea. You're like, why not just fly drones with GPR? And I've obviously got to fly at a certain elevation, but fly drones with GPR over there. And that saved a lot of lives. And that was like one of the first ones. I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know the answer. Why am I doing that? But yeah, man, that would make
it feasible today. For sure.
Yeah. How long,
have you and David been together, by the way?
Well, I mean, we've been dating for a while. You have to put a ring on it.
Oh, but, yeah. We've been going pretty solid for what, like 5 years now?
the podcast, I think, So you moved to Portland. You flew out to Portland and I met you. We had lunch at the airport or something, and you'd done your interviews and all that stuff. I don't know, was that 8-9 years ago? It's been a while, yeah.
Where was your first date at?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's actually. Yeah, actually, it was the Radisson I think we first met at the Radisson where you and Wendy and them did my interview.
Yeah, that's right. Right next to the office.
I do want to say that Steven's consumption of alcohol is twofold of what Joey and I's are, so we're trying to keep up. We look over and his glass is empty every time. So
he's just sitting there like tapping his fingers like, when's the next one, guys? Come on.
Something that doesn't drink much.
What are you guys drinking now, man? Kentucky Owl?
Yeah, so this is the Kentucky Owl St. Patrick's edition. So 100 proof.
The variety is vast at St. Clair Spirits.
Yeah, we just opened three bottles today so far.
And I drank about a quarter ounce of each.
Well, you drank about half to 1 ounce of each.
And for our listeners that don't know Sinclair Spirits, we joked about it in the past in several episodes. But Rob's house, where he's got a bajillion dollars worth of random whiskeys, the best of the best, because he's a hoarder of whiskeys, so fine whiskeys. Tell us about your passion here, man.
Yeah, so welcome to Sinclair Spirits virtually, all you listeners. But yeah, I just love collecting whiskey. It's like when I collected baseball cards when I was a kid, now it's on the whiskey. And
your wife supports it.
Yeah, she supports it for now.
Yeah,
he's nodding his head slightly.
Yeah,
you just bought a whole barrel though.
Yeah, we went down and did a barrel pick in Nashville, bought an entire barrel for a group here in Pittsburgh, and you know it's right over there on that shelf if you want to try it. So
custom labeled too, right?
Yeah, custom labeled. But yeah, I just love trying new whiskeys, and you know it. It's funny because people come down here and they're like, oh, you're like an alcoholic. I'm like, if I was an alcoholic, this would all be gone.
Right.
Yeah.
Heavily guarded Sinclair Spirits on that man.
Yeah.
We are sitting next to a very large gun safe. So heavily guarded, guys. You know? No, man. I always admire your collection. I think the first time that I came here, I was like, how is this? Like, you must make a bajillion dollars. Because there's some great whiskeys here, man.
A bajillion and $2.
A bajillion and two. There we go. And as his lovely wife brings in a smorgasbord of
charcuterie
and accoutrements.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, honey.
You're welcome.
you're going to be paying for this forever, man.
That looks good.
It does look good.
I just don't want all the listeners to hear us chomping.
Smacking. For those that don't know, we had recorded an episode before, and the audio was highly unusable. So
and inappropriate.
And it, well, only one of us was inappropriate. Now we'll never know. Yeah. And I think that conversation was highly littered with AI and alcohol. And there was a debate going on too, right? Where Dave was on one side, Dave and you on the most baby ass, like, oh, everything is AI. And Steve and I were more rational. Like, no, that isn't constant AI.
Very rational.
Yeah. You know what it is? Apple users, Android users.
We just figured it out.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. I love you, man. Do we want to open up that debate?
No, I was going to say, man, I don't know, because I feel like, you know, if we get into the actual terms of it, artificial intelligence, but we had that. So I'll let that one die.
We're going to include this into a LinkedIn post when we post this. I have yet to figure that on X, but we'll do it on LinkedIn.
All right.
Yeah. Right. Is machine learning AI?
It's a form of AI. Exactly.
I feel like we're being baited right now.
Yeah, it's not gonna work.
Yeah. We're Android users. We're too smart for that.
Should we take a siesta?
That's funny.
All right. So There obviously is a lot of technology being adopted in the industry. The major companies, you know, the Autodesk, the Esrys, the Bentleys, they're all making changes. They do have to keep up or integrate with the different AIs or, you know, so-called AIs that we're talking about. But there also has to be a level of integration that's starting to seep through. And I know you and I have had conversations about integrations and, you know, what connects, what doesn't connect. There seems to be a lot that is left to the imagination. Think on the, you're mostly on the civil side, Rob, here, but on the vertical side, I'm sure you are aware, but the connecting the data to the facilities management side, integrating said data, again, earlier, like I was saying, providing service contracts, all that sort of stuff. How do you provide ownership of the data? How do you integrate your data? How do you make it meaningful with those people? I don't think we're there yet. I think, you know, at least mainstream, but on the civil side, what kind of issues are you guys seeing with data integration?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean,
I guess the hard ones, man.
Yeah, that's a hard question. So for me, it's like, you know, I guess throughout my journey and my career, it's like using the tools that we already have to its fullest capability. Like, we're not even there yet.
No.
We got people that don't even use what we have today. So it's like the future stuff is like far-fetched for a lot of our users.
I know civil people that don't know much about styles or have templates. They're using the out-of-the-box shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that just...
What about the grading optimization?
Yeah. No, we got it.
Yeah.
Hit or miss, but go ahead. Yeah.
We've been having, you know, the kind of debates use an XREF or a data shortcut or how you know, even fundamental things like, do you label your sheets in model space or paper space? It's stuff like that. That's, you know, for me, it's like 20 years old
and we're still relevant.
Having, I don't want to say battles, but debates on where it should go.
Well, you obviously have a bigger breadth of knowledge in that space than most people. You crushed us at Jeopardy, like a bajillion to one again.
And I even waited for you all to answer.
You waited for us to get them all wrong. And then you're like, guys, the correct answer is very casually, very calmly, destroyed everybody. And without ego. It was great, man.
That was later.
Yeah. He's like, fucking moron. Yeah, it was over dinner. He's like, I can't believe I'm hanging out with you losers. But the things that our industry has not adopted that you've figured out earlier on, you know, maybe that needs to be shouted from the rooftops at some point in time. It's just, it's hard to get buy-in en masse and everybody's so focused narrowly. I got to just get this project. I got to do this. And we don't have the forethought, like you were talking about, the infrastructure to be able to put into place to think about, okay, I can do this now and I can force my way through this, but how do I set myself up for automation or to do bigger and better jobs in the future with more efficiency? I know companies that don't have a standardization between their survey and their civil.
Right.
So what are you're recreating the wheel every time you import a freaking drawing. Yep. Like, what are you doing here?
And I think companies are content, you know, they're content because they've been doing it the same way for 10, 20 years and they're profitable, they're making money. But if they implemented some of these solutions and technologies and workflows, whatever you want to call it, they could be 10% more profitable. And, you know, a company that's making $200 million a year, that's a lot of freaking money.
It is. Yeah.
So I think the industry needs to listen to the experts, like, you know, shout out to the Bartle brothers. I mean, just pull up XREF for data shortcut and Jeff's going to tell you exactly how it 20 years ago, how it should be. People are always waiting around for the answer. But as far as like products go, I mean, what are your thoughts on how 20 years ago it used to be something had to come to market for you to change your workflow, where now we can make that change ourselves with internal developers and internal programmers and things?
So my sales person, you know, experience here on this is I'm going to get myself in trouble.
That's a good question.
Yeah, you did. I think it's twofold, right? In part, it's because of a lack of development in a space that normally saw a lot of development very quickly. When things got stagnant, people spoke out. The ability to develop just enable people to take on the development that wasn't happening, because I guess when you get to a certain point, you're not focused on a niche per se. You're focused on the whole industry as a technology company. It's hard for you to make everybody happy. But if you enabled and opened up the APIs and did all the things, then instead of getting yelled at for not developing, you're suddenly enabling. And you know, I hear both sides of it. Sometimes it's, oh, that's just a lack of development on their part and they're forcing us to create our own tools. Well, you've always had to create your own tools in some extent. Did you have Lisp creators back in the day? Because almost every firm I know did. You know, like the change is happening. It's just happening more broad scale. Now, to your point about what is it doing for the industry, essentially, like, is it really helping us? I think it is. I think what I'm seeing more now is, yes, since that Pandora's box has been opened, more and more companies are hiring developers, are hiring non-traditional AEC folk, you know, somebody who has no design experience or no CAD experience per se, and kind of saying, hey, take your coder mentality and let's apply this to our industry. I don't want you to figure out or even figure out how our software works or how we use the software. You tell us from a coding, standpoint, what you see as the future of this, and then we'll figure out how to adapt or apply or vice versa, right? It seems to be the coding industry is starting to be embedded in the AEC industry. And to your guys' point earlier, Rob, I think it was you that mentioned this, that we are becoming technology companies, software companies. I think that is at the heart. I think that's really what the future of the industry is holding. But I don't think it's just our industry. I think it's all industries.
Right. So, I mean, to that point, I think, fundamentally, we're always going to be an engineering, architectural, AEC company.
Because you make your money.
Supported by technology. But technology is becoming more and more important every single day because it's evolving so quick. It's helping us automate, become more efficient, you know, all that stuff.
Well, you make your money stamping drawings. Yeah. That's your output. Your recognizable output, right? Your billable output.
But at the majority of our output. But we have outputs now that are not sealed.
Right.
Yeah.
They are reference consultant only. You know, BIM scan to BIM is a great example.
Oh, God. David, take a shot. Shit. Scan to BIM, digital twin. No, but you're right.
Steven's empty again.
No. Oh, he's got a little.
Yeah, you're the ones that bought ClearEdge. Don't talk to me.
By the way, ClearEdge has some new, they're moving to freemium tools is what they're
doing. I've seen that, yeah.
By the way, did you see the legs on this thing?
He's talking about whiskey, everybody. Not his
stuff. Rob, you do have some nice legs.
Shaving for St. Patrick's
Day. Yeah, shaving, yeah. You're definitely Irish. I see the red here. Yes, sir. Yeah. What about you? I don't know your ancestry.
German.
Yeah.
What are you?
I'm a mutt, dude. I'm a shit. Italian, Portuguese, Assyrian, Armenian, French, Irish, and Indian.
Jeez.
Yeah.
David, what do you got in you?
Campbell.
Guinness.
I don't even know, dude. Scottish, Irish, Polish. Yeah.
Redneck. A shitload of redneck.
Redneck, yeah. A lot of rednecks.
Lost half your fan base.
I think we've been pretty open with who we are. Oh, man. It's wild to think that two guys that used to just bullshit around a water cooler just decided to turn on a mic one day. This is what this podcast has become.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Everybody, you know, not that we ever tout to have fancy production or anything, but we are literally set up on a pretty slick pool table surrounded by all the whiskey you could ever want.
At least 200 gallons. I mean.
With a borrowed microphone, recording through Teams, and started a podcast. Yeah. So and anybody
great,
can do
great
it.
Great company.
I mean, great. Yes. Well, definitely great company. Yeah.
And a $4,000 headset and a charcuterie board that is calling my name.
Yeah, yeah. After
that, here in a minute. And filthy hooligan cigars.
Yeah. But I was just getting at earlier about products. I mean, we used to have to wait around for Autodesk or name a company to provide a solution to a problem we've been having for 20 years. I mean, we still can't bring Word documents into Revit natively. Yeah. I mean, stuff like that. But now we can take lean approaches to almost everything. I mean, we're hiring software developers that have no AE experience whatsoever. They just know the languages. And we say, okay, we want to auto-create ACC projects. It's done in a week. They had no idea what the ACC API was. They just knew programming language.
When I chat with people about like OCR, for example, in our industry, they're like, oh, yeah, Bluebeam, we love this or we do this. And it's like, Well, we actually in the AEC industry are wowed by what we can do in the stupidest programs ever. Very small piece of what OCR does. My buddy who's in fintech, his whole company, all they do is automate stuff through OCR. Like they build AI platforms, they automate everything through OCR. Everything is OCR, and they, you know, they work with all the big names that would probably get him shot if he said anything. But I don't know, man. But we, our industry, while we are adopters of technology, and we had this conversation with Adam Wingerson from here, who's also a Pittsburgh native, recently, where we were talking about how construction and design, you know, historically in the AEC industry, we've been seen as technology laggards, but we're actually technology adopters. Well, even though we're technology adopters, the technology we have still hasn't been forced into our industry at the same rate at, you know, at least the cool stuff, the very useful stuff. Like we haven't found the use cases that other industries have found for the same technology. Like it exists in all, you know, capacities. It's just we don't have those same APIs or that same functionality because, you know, construction is normally seen as a low margin. Yes, it accounts for 25% of the workforce, whether directly or indirectly, but it's seen as a low margin kind of thing. But fintech, all the money in the world's in fintech. So they get all the technology first. They're waiting for it to bleed and trickle over. And hopefully the Apples of the world and everybody else, you know, putting in consumers' hands, we can actually start to bridge those gaps, see how it applies to our industry. I don't know. The OCR piece is kind of, I don't know, man. There's so much more that could be done with it. Yeah.
I think your buddy Rob Grabow, if I'm saying his last name.
Grabow.
Yeah, with his Markup X.
Oh my God.
He has like the potential there, and I know he's developing like, you know, to be able to take text from Bluebeam to be able to copy and paste it into Revit or AutoCAD, Civil 3D. Like, you know, for something as simple as that, that can save so much time throughout a project lifecycle.
Have you guys seen Auto Review yet? I mean, we're talking toys now, right? Can we always talk about toys? I mean, yeah. Auto Review on the civil space actually can reference code for setbacks and property lines and everything just by looking at your PDFs using some sort of OCR development.
Yeah.
You haven't seen that yet?
No. I've seen a few different like code review platforms and stuff, but not necessarily that one. Dave and I have talked about this before. It's like this is the future of the design piece. It's like, oh, you're designing this and it's using AI. This is the main benefit of AI. And again, I think we're 5-10 years away before we get a meaningful impact. At least that's predictable and reliable where you're not having to double check everything, you know, with some
what happened?
Rob out drank Steven for once.
Well, he's at his house.
He doesn't have to drive home.
I do have 2 flights of stairs to go up, though.
For the police that are listening, we have Ubers waiting. No, I'm just kidding.
Personal
ballets. Yeah, personal ballets. Courtesy of Weight Trim.
Sinclair Jr.
I think that we've gotten to the point, though, where the technology side is, you know, it's there, and the OCR, the code review, the AI stuff, it's going to happen eventually. I just think before we get to the reliable part, this, you know, the validation, you know, maybe there's an automated validation part that happens where you're not having to waste the same amount of time going through everything for the code review stuff. I think that's going to be I think it's going to be pretty standard, you know, 5 years. I think that will be probably one of the first real AI pieces that comes. Although I have to say this, guys, did you guys know, and I may have mentioned this at AU, but I learned it at AU. Listen to that sound, the cork popping. Did you guys know that AutoCAD has like some AI tools
and Civil 3D
already built into it?
Yeah.
For PDFs?
23.
Oh my gosh, man. Yeah. That's what happens when you're not doing production anymore. Like you don't know. Like you see the bullet points, you're like, oh yeah, it does this. And you don't actually
know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know, man. Yeah, it was pretty slick to see. And the developer was nerding out with me. He's like, oh, it does this. I'm like, how many people are using this? He's just not enough. I was like, oh, all right. Man. Wild times. But Rob, you're Autodesk Expert Elite, so I expect you to know everything about Civil 3D and AutoCAD.
I do not know everything. Nobody knows everything.
No.
There's no way.
What about the Bartle brothers, man?
Is everything about Civil 3D?
They wouldn't even admit that they don't know everything. Mm-hmm. But the Bartle brothers are awesome. Mm-hmm. Those guys are great resources. plug for the Civil Immersion blog.
Yep.
Check it out if you haven't seen it. Sign up for their newsletter. It's awesome. So great stuff.
It's all downstream data to me. That's what I'm concerned with is, I don't know if you see it as much, Rob, but it's like what I was mentioning, our water wastewater teams is, you know, they start in Civil 3D. They go to Revit. They have to come back to C3D, eventually InfraWorks, Navisworks, and then over to like Archibus. I mean, they're taking their stuff into asset management, real stuff. I'm not going to say the DT, but it's actually taking all their valves and readers and everything. And we're just all on our knees waiting for IFC to fix the problems. I just don't know what we're going to do once IFC comes.
Passing data through Tandem somehow because of they bought that team for the integrations specifically for Archibus. Well, they do a lot more than Archibus, but Archibus is a big one.
Not currently through Tandem. I have to look into it more. But right now it seems that we're just relying on IFC and it loses a lot of schema data.
Yeah. Smart IFCs are great, but they're still IFCs.
What's the alternative right now?
There is one, man. Right. Yeah, yeah. Right. The idea of a connector, Dave and I obviously joke about this stuff often. It's like, you know, price increases, development, all that stuff that happens. You know, there's a lot of anger and frustration in the industry. Thank you, Rob. About certain aspects, you know, how do we... Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Jesus.
how do we move to the point where technology is more integrated across platform, and obviously we kind of settle on IFCs or a common file type essentially where people can push and pass data through, but you're also dependent on the limitations of the standard that you're using. That also sets a limitation for other entrants into the market. The 800 pound gorillas that are in the space are going to remain 800 pound gorillas in the space because they set the standards essentially. Like, how do you unseat that? Knock on wood, I don't really think you can. I think, I think they're going to keep doing what they do. And all we're going to see over time is maybe a push and pull through APIs, maybe less of a file type and more about the APIs and transitioning data. So whatever that pass through looks like, an high pass solution or, a more standard connection. Dave, this is your wheelhouse. I'm sure you love this sort of stuff, especially working on a data center and talking that stuff. But, iPass, I think is, going to be a good band-aid in the future.
What about SME Workbench? I mean, David, I don't know if you've ran into that one or if you have as well with Reality Capture Data, but I mean, that's really good. That's one of the biggest ones I've seen out there, even for the high price point, to convert data using some sort of pattern language.
Yeah, I haven't. I mean, obviously, one of the biggest things I've seen, at least from what I've been able to use, is APIs. Like, I mean, I haven't seen any, like, because natural pattern language, like, if we could get that to interpret the points and the locations and, things of that nature, I would see it very, very valuable. Personally, now, what I'm seeing is I use Magnet Collage Web, and there's an API there that runs in the background. Like, I can tag to that. Actually, it is a converter. It's a web-based file conversion. And I can kick it out pretty much.
Are you specifically referencing like pushing data to like job sites, or what are you referencing the data conversion side to?
Both, dude. So what I'm saying is, if let's say someone goes out and they take a point, they take a scan, right? In that raw scan, that raw data, a lot of times it needs to be converted into some other file type. It needs to be processed, or in the case of a DWG, a Revit model, to go out to a bulldozer, right? It needs to be converted into a package file type. If it's going out like the TP3, if it's going out to a total station, it needs to be a package of like a package job file with the background and the points file, or things of that nature that are ready to go out to that machine. So essentially, what I've seen is that there's a conversion, like cloud-based conversion through APIs, and there's an engine that's dedicated to setting up, like what I've done there is you set up trigger recognitions for certain file types, And based off the file type, you'll align it to, you know, a certain conversion file type, like a DWG. And oh gosh, I was trying to think of the LN3, the line file, all that, the alignments. Yeah, but essentially you're converting all of that to a TP3. Like you'll align those file types based on where they are as they update, or, you know, once things happen at a certain point in time, a trigger, then it allows you to go ahead and you know, push through that conversion. With point cloud,
we're going to make that all an API in the background. That's just going to do all that. We don't even have to talk about, like, that's just going to happen at some point.
Oh, definitely.
What's the SP workbench that you mentioned, Stephen?
I forget their parent company, but I used those guys. It's fun getting old. Like 8 years ago, to convert. I'm trying to remember. I think it was converting reality capture data from Leica to ArcGIS. At the time, they didn't have any integration tools, so straight in is, I think, like an E57. But it claims it can do almost anything in to out, which obviously, you know, the old idiom of garbage, but it's also, like, I think, a $25,000 license. So
FME or
FME?
FME. Okay.
See, the S came from
Oh shit! No, I'm sorry.
So David, question for you, man.
Yes, sir.
Years ago, I saw this concept at a conference. I don't even know what conference it was, where they had machine control set up in a dozer, but they had the glass from the dozer was a clear LCD screen that the operator used augmented reality to see where the cut and fill needed to go. So you upload all those TP3, all those files to the dozer, and the operator could see through the glass and see what he needed to do. And it, like, dropped off the face of the earth.
No, I didn't. So we still have it in a different, in the same aspect. It's at Con Expo every year, every 3 or 4 years. Are you guys familiar with Con Expo?
Is that where you had your giant bar?
Yeah, we usually have a bar wherever we go. But Con Expo is a massive conference. It's the largest. It's the largest trade show conference in North America. Like 125,000 people go there. Wow. So 10 times the size of AU. It's ginormous. Our booth, so a booth normally at a conference like AU is like a 40 by 40 or 20 by 40. Our booth at Con Expo is like a city block. We have excavators and dozers sitting in the booth.
It's nuts, man. So just like what you were talking about there, Rob, we still have it. That was one of the things I wanted to try and use as like a, you know, kind of marketing thing at the booth to be able to pull people in. Because one thing with, you know, aptics, TopCon loves showing aptics, but you need to have, like, one of the big pieces is you can show and connect to a live piece of equipment that's moving, you know, it's cutting dirt. It knows exactly, like, the blade knows to raise and level based on the actual, you know, cuts and fills from the design file. And they have these simulators that you can sit in, and it's pretty much like a headset, man. And you can move levers, you can do everything like that. And it's, but you're,
it's
controlling.
It's not a simulator, buddy. It's real time, man. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not. Yeah, it's connected to an actual piece of equipment in our Livermore, California location. So if you wanted to dig with a dozer or an excavator or anything like that, they actually have the equipment out there set up, ready to go. You put on the headset and everything. And yeah, dude, it's that to me. I mean, it's even though you saw it, like, let's say, you know, 10, 15 years ago or 8 years ago. Yeah. I think it's still freaking, like, it's cool as shit, dude.
He looks, man.
Yeah. I just think it's still cooler than shit. I don't know how we're not seeing more of that out there. You know, I mean, we're seeing drones take off more and more.
Ahead of your time, right? We talked about this with, like, Clear Edge technology, like, you know, a lot of other technologies, like the Scan-to-BIM stuff. Like, there's a time and place. Like, it's ahead of its time. It's really cool at the time, but finding the use case maybe at the time wasn't great, but we're still seeing it's still there. It still hasn't gone away. We talk about it at every trade show. Like, do we bring this out?
The timing's everything. I mean, what was it? I literally had you and Kelly Cohn from Clear Edge on the call 2 years ago about retail fixture recognition through scanning.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all the rage right now with AI models. It's insane, you know?
Yeah. Timing is everything, right?
Well, that's machine learning. I thought that wasn't AI, Stephen.
Oh my gosh! What did you? What did you get?
I'm gonna buy an iPhone and get a Mac.
I love it. I love it.
Get some Yeezys while I'm at it.
You're so trendy, man.
Shit. But I think as a special guest on the Brewing With Them podcast, we should get a comp ticket to the Con Expo.
Yeah, right? That sounds awesome.
Oh, yeah. Because Dave and I get tickets to Con Expo. Oh, man. Con Expo is it's another world. So Autodesk has a booth there, and they are, like, one of the smaller vendors, which is crazy, right?
With Build, though?
Yeah, even with Build, which is crazy, though, because our Aptix plugin right now runs on Build. So what we do is we take machine control data and tie it back to tasks. And again, we nerd about this later on, but we tie back to tasks and the new schedule API. Have you guys seen the new schedule tool that's coming from Build?
No.
Many years ago, Autodesk bought this company from DPR called Plan. Jeez, man, I got a little cough.
Get some bourbon.
Get a little burn going. Yeah. Kill those germs. Right? So Autodesk bought this company. I believe it was from DPR. It was BIM 360 plan many years ago. It was about, 6 week look aheads, pull planning, that sort of stuff. They've had scheduling as part of ACC. Again, ACC being a new iteration of BIM 360, different APIs, still running on Forge, but with the plan grid underpinnings. And Dave, you deal with this shit all day long, so I'm preaching to the choir. But the APIs are now starting to come full circle, right? We're getting one-to-one parity. So plan kind of almost died off when they moved to ACC. Well, plan's now making its way in and be released. It's called work planning through ACC. You'll have scheduling capabilities beyond just importing
Primavera,
P6 or Primavera. What's the other one, David? Now you're on.
It's Project. It's Project. There's Microsoft Projects. There's Asta Power Project Primavera P6.
Yeah, Primavera P6, Project, and Asta, yeah.
I do want to say
APIs for forever. They're the kind of the industry standard, especially if you're working on any infrastructure projects. The government almost mandates that you use P6, and I'm sure you guys have seen this in industry. But we'll have the ability to edit and manipulate schedules, just not push back to a P6, because obviously that's, a different rights and permissions sort of thing. But as far as scheduling your projects, it should all be in Build here in no time.
Build's really impressive. I mean, I don't know if you ran into it. I know you were all C3D, or C4R, C3D. Yeah. Thank you.
You mentioned data short shocks versus XREPs earlier, and I was like, oh, you got to be on data shortcuts now, right?
No comment. But I was just saying about Build. I mean, I don't know, Rob, if you've seen it on the civil infrastructure side, but like auto specs and what's some other things Build's coming out with.
Talking about the pipe stuff,
It's, they are investing so much. You can tell that it's the writing on the wall for them. I mean,
so 10 years ago, I specifically focused on BIM 360. That was my, that was sported and did all the stuff for BIM 360 many years ago, Field and Glue. Worked with a lot of large GCs. It was a cool project. Got to do stuff for Tesla, and I thought it was really cool back then. And then when they moved to the new Project Alexandria, which was Docs, totally different underpinning. Yes, I forced myself to learn it. Went through all that sort of stuff.
Swim lanes.
Oh my gosh. forced myself to learn all that stuff. And then they bought yet another company, and they forced us to go through that path. And I kind of divested as I switched roles in the company, but Dave's taken that on, and he knows everything. He knows, Dave, I don't want to toot your horn too much, but I think you know more about ACC than Autodesk does. You were actually in it, live it, do projects, do all that great stuff.
Well, what I've found out from Autodesk is a lot of times they have they have individual experts, and that's one of the problems is, like, I mean, it's great, but it's not. When you get a build implementation, experts, exactly. Because you're talking to either a person that can integrate, or you're talking to a cost expert, or you're talking to a build expert, or you're talking to, a BIM Collaborate Pro. It's not really that somebody that understands all of it. And that's really where the value is, when you can connect all of it together in that same conversation.
That's not specific to Autodesk. I mean, that's most in the industry. Like, a company rolls out a product, they have an expert in that specific niche that focuses on that, Procore, whoever. Yeah. Somebody's got a specific niche that follows that route, costing, financials, whatever. Mm-hmm. somebody who focuses on project management. Rarely do they have anybody that focuses on all things that cross in between how the data actually.
Now, one big thing I was going to say, I've been really, really focused on lately, and it's kind of my project where Scott's been hanging or kind of heading up the Aptics piece for us, and he's really been trying to do tasks, right? His big thing is task alignment. If we can start with a schedule and you essentially can align that schedule with, you know, what, let's say the dozer, the cuts, the fills, the gray, the curb, you know, whatever on the entire project.
Specific task. The issue though,
any task,
is our industry is not task focused.
You're right. It's not. Focused. It's not. Now on that note,
look ahead though, is going to change that. Yeah.
Well, yes, you're right. But so on that note too, I want to take it a step further. Scott has this great idea for tasks and aligning it for progress tracking. And progress tracking is great, but there's a piece that I feel like we're missing there that is super, super valuable and super important that can really, I think, push it to everyone in our industry. And that is automated pay apps. I think that if we can start utilizing that information, the progress tracking, the data, the telematics, anything that, you know, the tasks, if we really can accomplish tasks and we can get it down to actual progress tracking, whether it's in the building, it's on site, whatever it is, we should be able to use that data to automate filling in progress for pay apps and start to automate pay apps.
Do you remember our conversations around scan to BIM, but actually changing it for scan to pay apps essentially?
Yes, dude.
Where you
yes.
can actually do scan for pay essentially, where you're actually tracking progress. I mean, one day maybe that'll happen, but once you tie money to an issue, a specific element, it'll actually change. And once you tie money to it, people really want to figure out how to game the system for them.
Well, yeah, because you think about it, how many people.
But Autodesk just bought
GCPay
app. Yeah. So I think we're going to get a lot of functionality like that inside of the Autodesk Construction Cloud. I do see that kind of happening. But you and I have been chatting for a minute here. I don't want to divest to these fellas here.
Yeah.
Does Androids have a scanner app? Does it have LiDAR?
No comment.
No. The answer to that one is no.
David, I got a serious question for you.
Yes, sir.
What is your opinion on Bentley's ProjectWise?
So ProjectWise is actually, from what I've seen, I mean, it's a decent usable solution. It's another data environment though. It's their version of a common data environment.
No server-based applications should exist in the 21st fucking century.
It's not server-based. No, it's cloud-based. It's cloud-based. That's it's
the server.
Oh, and it's
yeah.
Yep.
So somebody has to on-prem it.
Yep.
I'm beyond that.
So I mean, I see it, and I understand it, and I mean I know why. Obviously, there's a push for a huge common data environment out there. There's got to be
the state. But the big thing. No, Dave. Here we live in Pennsylvania, the state where freaking Bentley is headquartered, and yet our own DOT is moving away from Bentley.
So I'll tell you why. And this is the big piece I wanted to say about Bentley ProjectWise. I mean, I see it as being a valuable common data environment for Bentley users. That it is. You know,
it's
because they can host
platform.
Their.
It's not.
It is a project platform, thing. But the drawback is Bentley, and you'll see with what Autodesk actually did it right this time, 100%. In the sense that I can store a shit ton of files on Docs. Excuse my language, but I can store a shit ton of documents, whether it's, you know, Word documents, it's Excel documents. There's the integration with Microsoft 365 where I can actually work on those things at the same time, you know, and the hosting of the design application, like being able to, you know, when they combined C4R with Docs and BIM Collaborate Pro and they gave us that environment. Yes, that was a big piece. But in all reality, where it sets itself apart is really one, being able to store multiple file formats that users can work off of at any given time. And then two, the biggest, I'd say the biggest downfall for ProjectWise is that that's all they do. They're no better at that point than a SharePoint or a OneDrive, right? I mean, yes, they got a Bentley name on it and they have some features there for working with Bentley. But at the same time, if you think about the usability.
Well, Bentley operates in the ProjectWise operates in multiple file formats.
Yeah, okay, but
data hosting is very cheap, and that should never be, in today's world, that should not be your determinant factor in stuff. I think
it is one thing to store off of data.
Data hosting, data storage. There's a company out of Kansas that does it for like dirt. Kansas or something. I don't know. I have to look at it. That does it for like pennies. Like it's so cheap. It's cheaper than AWS. And AWS, in my mind, is fairly economical.
Before you get sued, I mean, I just don't want to say, like, you know, Bentley shit.
No, I'm not saying
that. No.
What I'm saying is, for Dave's point, though, like, to say that the data storage side and that file formats are the biggest benefits, they're not, because most things operate in multiple file formats
these days. Sure. No, yeah, you're right. That's not the biggest benefit, I would agree. It's not going to be the benefit, I would say.
We hired, when we had full disclosure here, the company Dave and I worked for had a separate company where we each put in like $10 million and spun up, you know, in our best and brightest and spun up a separate company. And then TopCon and our parent company ended up buying those people out, bringing it back in. We have a wealth of Synchro experts, and the things I've seen them create in Synchro,
it's amazing.
Way better than Navisworks.
Way better.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like, way better than Navisworks. Yep.
Yeah. It's remarkable. Andy Evans is this gentleman's name?
Yeah. Yep.
The guy that came here, to Pittsburgh.
Andy Evans.
That guy knows more about Synchro than I could ever hope to know. But he worked for Bentley, and I'm not shitting on Bentley in any regards in that capacity. What I'm saying, though, is ProjectWise is a project-specific application hosted on-site, on-prem, at the end of the day, and it's not a collaboration tool. It's a file storage mechanism.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, that was my biggest point. It's a file storage. It's no better than OneDrive or SharePoint. The capability that ACC gives us, not only to work off of those files, so, you know, Revit, all that kind of stuff, but Word, all that. But I would say the biggest thing that separates it is like the model coordination piece. We make fun of them, but the design collaboration swim lanes. Side,
right? So the model coordination, well, always, you know, there's great tools out there. Revisto, you mentioned earlier, Stephen, it's best in class industry. I don't think it's very expensive, if memory serves correct.
It's kind of expensive. It's on a by-project basis, scope or contract value, which is kind of a...
Well, that's where everybody's moving to. It's the Procore model, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, sorry, maybe Sintune is the one I was thinking about. But either way, no, I unmuted it. Sorry.
As soon as I coughed.
I muted it when I coughed, yeah.
Saw the red light on the day.
So the crazy thing, David, like, I agree with you with ProjectWise, but ACC, like at AU this year, you know, Andrew Agonos was up there, and he's like, we have X number of petabytes of data in ACC. And I'm like, but they don't. They store the full file versions. Like, you know, they don't do like incremental changes. Like if you save 87 versions of a file, it's the full 87 versions of that file. It's not on the packet level. And it's like, why the hell haven't they figured that out yet on ACC?
It's all on AWS production servers too. Like if we hosted all that ourselves, we'd have cold storage after a few versions.
We're paying for it. And that's the crazy thing, too, with ACC is, like, you know, you pay for your license, then it's unlimited storage.
Yeah.
You can store 80,000 petabytes of data, and it's the same cost.
Oh, yeah, I blasted it with point cloud data just to have fun.
Yeah, which makes no sense. That's the way it is.
What's new and exciting, David?
No. Yeah, I know. And I was going to say that I completely agree with you, man. It's kind of nuts that, you know, there's no limit of storage of the amount of data that you can store there. But, you know, the version controls, the comparisons, you know, the issues, the additional tools, the file reviews, all that stuff that's there as well. Those all definitely add more value. But really, in all reality, guys, I mean, as kind of Steven mentioned earlier, I really think the value comes when you start adding, you know, when you have build, when you have takeoff, when you have cost management, as we bring in auto specs, as we bring in closeout, you know, as you bring in trade tap, building connected, all the other pieces that are siloed, because every other piece out there, I mean, like we mentioned before, it seems like we're software companies anymore. You got to manage so many different types of licenses and then hope that those, you know, softwares can integrate. If they can't, then okay, what file format is it? PDF? Is it CSV? Yeah. What are we kicking out so we can get it in there? Yes. You know, if we can start to get a central environment with all of those tools inside of it that our project teams can utilize, whether it's the design side onto the construction side and actual, you know, project management with costing. I mean, dude, that's where I see the value, is all of it in one. Obviously, I know I've been able to get into the background of ACC and I see what it is. And it's really just a bunch of websites that are hyperlinked to each other. But you know what? In all reality, that to me is super valuable when I can stay in one area. I can stay in one area. I can click on this button and I know that it's going to take me over to cost. Or, you know what, if I have this RFI that started up as an issue and it actually escalated into a change order, being able to track all of that in one environment instead of being able to, you know, having to jump back and forth to different areas and read reports or what have you.
Will it ever turn back into a single, you know, environment? Because we've always talked about, you know, I remember pitching the early days of the common data environment, but really all it ended up being was a single source of truth for one specific environment that didn't talk to another environment. And I think at the end of the day, the future is, yeah, have your own data environment, but make sure that it can talk to others that may or not play well together in the industry, but just because they're industry norms. And I think that'll change. But that said, man, I think we're at a point now where we're about an hour in. We have a charcuterie board. We have a charcuterie board staring us in the face and some beautiful cigars that are smelling very, very delicious. And before we end it, this is where we should end it, but I think before we end it, I got to ask Rob, and then we'll go to you, Steven. You know, what is the most, don't say AI. AI cannot be the answer to this, guys.
Or digital twin.
Or digital
twin. I don't even know what the question is.
What is something that you're looking forward to, a specific problem that you see plaguing the industry that you're hoping to be solved?
That's a tough question, Joey. That is a tough question.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
Yeah.
Or not at all.
That's why I drink whiskey to put all that behind me. I think it's just efficiencies, automation, getting better, you know, doing more with less. And there's so many tools out there to help with that. It's like we talked earlier about educating your staff and upskilling your staff to make things better. And
yeah.
There's 100 different ways to do that.
How do you do that though in a market so inundated? It's like as soon as they said, like 5-10 years ago, they announced that our industry was so underutilized and underserved in technology. As soon as they announced that, like everybody started flocking into, I've got an app for this, I got an app for this, trying to like propagate our industry.
Funding's the problem.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. It's like, you know, somebody's funding, you know, the tools or what have you. How do you weed through that and actually find the ones that are more beneficial to you?
Yeah, I mean, the reality of it is like most AEC firms, like you have 80 or 90% of your staff that are stuck in the archaic, old school ways of doing things 20 years ago, and they're content and they're still
profitable. I've always done it.
Still making money, which is great, but like then you have people like Steven and I that come in and we're
the disruptors.
The disruptors. We're like, here's all this cool new technology, and we have to build trust, gain trust, buy in, like all that stuff. We're like, hey, let's go this route because it's going to save us or reduce our efforts by 10%, and we're going to be more profitable. But it's all about building that trust and getting buy in with all these new technologies. So
yeah.
I mean, that's a tough question, but there's so many ways to improve things.
It's a great place to start.
Yeah, I feel like we're at a segment or a point in time, rather, where the industry has been inundated, and it it kind of lends itself to people like yourself to kind of wade through all the BS that's out there, figure out the meaningful applications, the meaningful workflows, meaningful, you know, and it varies by industry too, or not industry, but by organization, right? Where are you at in this ladder? Because that tool is only going to get you so far. So it's all about the incremental gain. So you guys might be at a certain place, you know, a different point than you guys. Mm-hmm. So the tools you adopt may be different than the tools you adopt just based on where you are. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know, man. I think we're in a fascinating space. Construction is no longer the laggard in technology adoption. And not that it ever was, but that's the way that, you know, they spun it. I don't know, man.
Pittsburgh is the place to be, though, man.
It really
is the freaking innovation hub of the country, I think, or one of the small innovation hubs of the country.
Top three. Yeah.
So on the last episode, we had, and we'll end with this, we had Adam Wingerston from Lighthouse Electric on, who's a buddy of mine, fellow beer connoisseur, and I just admire his beard. It's beautiful. Anyways.
Watch out, David.
Yeah.
He's got another date lined up.
David's just frumpy. He's old news. Adam and I, we were talking about this. Is like on the BIM side of things, Pittsburgh has been slow to adopt. There are a lot of great firms out here that do BIM, but it's not across the spectrum as it is in other large cities. You know, there are a lot of firms that are just hanging on to the old ways they've done stuff. Like you were saying earlier, like 90% of the staff makes some money doing this, and they might not have a Rob Sinclair or a Stephen Rushmore to help guide them into the 21st century or even the 22nd century, rather, to kind of figure out what actually is meaningful. What do those changes actually look like? What software, what technology, what people, you know, where they should go, kind of helping steer the industry. It seems like Pittsburgh on the BIM side of things kind of skipped over that. Like we've got a lot of technology firms here. There's I moved from Portland, Oregon to Pittsburgh, and I feel like I didn't miss a step in the tech scene. There's the same tech scene available in both mm-hmm. scenes. It's just that the Pittsburgh tech scene doesn't have the BIM vernacular. It maybe calls it something else, but there's a lot of other, you know, where in Portland AI or AIA was driving a lot of the adoptions and the community and all that stuff. In Pittsburgh, it's different communities. It's different stuff, and it might not be labeled BIM, but there is a certain aspect of that technology adoption in our industry. It's not BIM per se. Yeah.
We're going to jump in real quick. I know we're trying to close out, but it's funny you compare Portland to Pittsburgh as far as BIM and technology adoption goes. But one thing that I don't know if it became clear to you is those are also two very big medical hubs.
Yeah.
So I bet you Portland has adopted technology more in their medical fields, their hospitals and everything than Pittsburgh has with UPMC and Allegheny Health. I would love to see and maybe someday come back here and talk on data flow in the healthcare industry. I mean, where is that going and what do we need to change that as well?
That is a very valid point. I've never drawn the parallels between the two. I do have a friend that works in Portland. He's a Pittsburgh native, lives in Pittsburgh, works in his only, you know, for the past like 5-10 years has worked for various medical companies in Portland that are specifically focused on the markets in Pittsburgh. Like it's crazy. Funny. Yeah. It's a wild, yeah. It's a weird parallel. And he, you know, focused on the Epic and, you know, those technologies. So yeah, I mean, you throw me for a loop. That's a good one. We'll have to talk about that more. We'll have to have like a Melanie Penesis on or whoever, somebody from the FM side of things to talk about the medical side of things for FM.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.